Paula.
Welcome. Hi, Paula. Great. Welcome, everybody. Tom Sparrow here to start our storytelling and organization call today, October 18th in 2015. And David Hutchins is on the line. And I think those of you who are on the call read a little bit about David as an author and a person who brings innovation into organizations. And he's just written the book called Circle of the Nine Muses, which is a storytelling field guide for innovators and meaning makers. And David, welcome. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today.
Yeah. David, just tell us a little bit about yourself, your career, just to give us a feel of who David Hutchins is.
Okay. Good. I began my career in advertising. Back in the 1990s, I was a copywriter at advertising agencies. And so, of course, the idea of brand as a story is kind of an old idea. A lot of the early work in organizational narrative, I think, comes from the world of branding. And so that's kind of where I began my journey. And after working in advertising for a few years, I got tired of writing about French fries for 50 hours a week. And I wanted to write about something else. I knew I wanted to write about innovation and leadership and teams. And so for the past 20 years, I've been on my own, working with different organizations in organizational learning and organizational communications. And at one point in my career, I realized that story was the common element to all of the work that I was doing. Beginning with the marketing and branding work, a lot of the learning work that I did was rooted in story. I have had a series of books that introduce different topics of organizational learning theory that are written in a fable format. I originally developed it for the Coca-Cola company, and then it went with a publisher and was it surprised me how well these crazy stories with talking animals and cartoon illustrations that introduced topics of systems theory and mental models and organizational learning, how well they were received globally. Mm-hmm. And so, that was yet another experience.
Yes. People's heads who open up and their thoughts come out.
that's in the book, Listening to the Volcano, yes, an introduction to the topic of dialogue. There's another called Outlearning the Wolves, in which we see a flock of sheep outwit a pack of hungry wolves, and in the process they become a learning organization, and they display many of the capacities of organizational learning. And so those crazy books are in about 12 languages now. And so I was surprised by that, and that was really the point where I started saying, what is it about this power of story that connects in this way and creates this kind of engagement? For the past 10, 12 years, I've been talking specifically about story and helping leaders connect it to knowledge work and culture work and strategy and alignment work. And really, ultimately, it's about influence as a leader. If you're a leader and you need to bring people together and move forward, I think story is a big part of that work. So in a nutshell, that's kind of the journey that has led me into being an organizational story guy.
And let me just ask a quick question, because I think most people know, but in case you don't, that David is a past chair of our organization, and I think you were a chair more than once. Can you say a little bit about how the storytelling and organization special interest group influenced you or helped you, or a little bit about that experience?
SIO was I think what SIO provided was community and connection. because, you know, there's some people out there talking about organizational storytelling. It's growing. It's a conversation that's attracting more people, but the practitioners tend to be geographically dispersed. You know, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and I know a couple of people who are talking about this here, but not more than a handful. And so I find that this community of practitioners is looking for others to talk to. Frankly, I've found quite a few on Twitter. That's been a nice way to join a global community. But SIO was a place where I could really, you know, show up. And, you know, we would start with conversations over the phone, and then we would meet in Cincinnati or in Jonesboro, Tennessee. And then I got to hug everybody and say, oh, so that's what you look like. And we were all excited to actually have a physical community at last. So that's what I love about SIO is that community.
Yeah, great. So I'm hoping that you'll tell us about your book and also share a story with us. What order would you like to do that in, or maybe they're together?
No, I just came back from an experience that I was really very moved by, and I'm looking for some friends to talk to about it and share it with. So I'd like to start with a story.
Yeah. Thank you. Great.
So, you know, my work typically is working in organizations all around the world, and I'm usually working with leaders and executive teams. And this past week, I was invited to an event that is really very different from the events that I'm typically part of. Is everybody on this call in the United States? This is all U.S., right?
Yes, we do. Well, I guess I should let – is there anybody who's calling from outside of the United States today?
Okay, good. I was invited to an event that is the Parliament of World Religions. And this is an event that it's a group that's been around for more than 100 years. They meet every 4 years, usually not in the United States, but this year it was in Salt Lake City. It's actually still going on today. I come home last night. And so for the past couple of days, I've been in Salt Lake City at this remarkable gathering of, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's hundreds of different religions, and practitioners and members of these religions who are saying, we need to be in dialogue with people who are different than us. And so it was Christianity, Muslim, Hindu, there were Sikhs and Buddhists. I met people who identified as pagan, Zoroastrian. I mean, it is just hundreds of religions, and I don't think I've ever been around this much intentional diversity before. It was really remarkable. And so my role at this event was to harvest stories. So I was there to do story work. I mean, you guys would love this. It was fascinating. There's a group in Salt Lake City that I connected with called the Life History Library. And so they're doing work with, it's similar to StoryCorps, of collecting individual narratives and life stories and then bringing them together in a library where, you know, we get into issues of story banking and how do you archive them and do something with them. But to me, the most important part is the moment of asking for stories. And so we were there receiving stories of oppression and abuse and stories of faith and belief and stories of feminist voice and gender identity and stories of resilience and leadership. And It was a remarkable event because my role was not to tell stories, and I wasn't there leading workshops. It was to receive stories. And, you know, in the book, Circle of the Nine Muses, I do have a chapter on the subject of story listening and all throughout the book are exercises in meaning making. Once the story is shared, how do we do something with that story? Now, once the story is shared, that's not the end of the conversation. It's the beginning of the conversation. That story is full of assumptions and beliefs and data and information, and how do we have that dialogue? And so this event in Salt Lake City was, from my end, purely about receiving stories. And so we would invite people into our area and tell them, we'd like to hear your story. And we had a camera rolling, and they gave permission for us to capture their story. And I would simply say, tell me a story about a turning point in your life. And the riches that were, that just the gifts that were given in those stories were, I just have never been so moved. So, for example, one woman sat down and she said, first she said her name and she said, I am a witch and I am here with my coven. And so, you know, for a brief moment, you know, the associations in my mind are firing, you know. You know, there's images and free associations of what I think that means. And I'm going, well, I know I've heard of Wiccan. Is witch and Wiccan similar? And so for a moment, you know, I'm experiencing this person as different than me. Then I say, tell me your story. And the story that this woman told me was simply about, well, not simply, it was a story about having breast cancer and how scared she was. And she told a really beautiful story. And I sat across from her making direct eye contact and really just feeling her story in my body. You know, it was whole body listening. I felt like I was just receiving her story. And so the experience that I had over and over again at the Parliament of World Religions is connecting with people who initially I saw their otherness, their difference. And then as soon as they started telling a story, the difference goes away. And it was connection and community and this sense that we are all friends and brothers and sisters and the same. And it was, Tom, it was just a marvelous experience. And I came home really thinking about this process of receiving other people's stories. And I'll tell you, I'll say one more thing and then I'll be quiet and we can have a conversation. But one woman who sat down, she was Israeli. We had quite a few people who came in together, Jew and Muslim, who wanted to tell stories together about friendship between Jews and Muslims. But one woman sat down, and she was Israeli, and she said, you know, I'm good at telling my story. She said, I tell my story a lot, and she said, I make people listen to my story. She said, I'll be in Central Park in New York on a park bench, and if there's someone next to me, I'll tell them my story because I want my story to be heard. And she said, I think this is the first time someone has ever asked me for my story. Mm. And she said, that's different. This feels different because somebody invited it. And that changes the experience. And so this idea of invitation, where we can look somebody else in the eye and say, you have a story, and I think you're a beautiful human being that I simply don't know yet, and I want to hear the story that you have. Would you share the gift of your story with me? And then to receive that without bias, simply take what comes to you. I've got a lot to process from the past few days, but it was a really exciting event. And I was glad to be on this call so I could share it with you and maybe we could spend some time talking about that. So that's kind of my story, and that's what my past few days have been like. And this idea of, you know, creating an interpretive community where we're hearing one another's stories, that's really the part of story work that's exciting to me and that I'm really interested in. So I'll pause there, Tom, if you have any questions or thoughts, or we can take this conversation anywhere you want.
Great. Thank you, David. I'll just turn that over to the group. Are there questions at this point or any clarifications that anybody'd like to voice?
Or observations or anything that's on your mind?
This is Tricia speaking. And Dave, thank you for sharing that, first of all. And I'm just really thinking about it, and I imagine some of my colleagues on the line are doing that as well. But I was really struck by that you, when you gave the example of the woman who described herself as a witch, and the way you said the images were firing in your mind, and of course they were firing in my mind too. Business about what we believe we know or how we approach another person. So I'm still mulling that over, but I felt that was a really powerful example, you know, of, you called it the difference and the otherness. So that was something that's resonating with me a great deal.
And Trish, you know what was interesting was everyone who sat down started with, here's how I identify.
Oh, interesting.
Everybody started with a statement. You know, I am a Sikh, or I am Muslim, or people would tell me what they are. And with pride, you know, with great pride. This is the group I associate with. And then we would immediately dismantle that together and find the point of connection. And again, it's story that does that. If I were to say to somebody, oh, that's interesting, so tell me what you believe. That would have been a really different conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would have started saying a lot of, statements of fact. And then the part of my brain that is judgment and critical, you know, not negative, but weighing and judging, I agree with that belief. I don't agree with that belief. I mean, it's a very different mode. But as soon as I say, oh, well, tell me a story, that's a different part of the brain, and it's a different way of hearing. And the information is different. And the things I heard, I don't find myself going, I disagree with that. Well, it's someone's story. You can't disagree with a story. All you can do is receive it and then join and connect. So I think story is really special work for that reason.
Yeah. Tom here, I love just the phrase that you said, full-body listening. Full-body listening, to totally be there. And I'm not sure how everyone takes that in, but it really spoke to me. Especially since body language is so important. Are there other comments or questions people have?
Yeah, David, this is Bill White. I'm calling from East Tennessee and presently work for a large chemical company there. But I'm in the process of transitioning into more of a full-time role in working with organizations on storytelling. And I was taking an opportunity just before this call to browse the first chapter there of Circle of the Nine Muses, and was just curious about something I saw there. And I know this is kind of going down to the weeds, but in your in your four core stories, the first one that you call out is Identify. But then at the end of the chapter, we have that little section where you've got some of Annette Simmons' other stories. The first one there is Who I Am. And I wonder if you could help me understand the difference between, you know, why you would call that out as a separate story type.
You're actually the first person who's asked me that question. and you're right. After the book was published, I thought, man, those are really similar. I think the distinction I was making was collective identity versus more of individual identity.
Okay, sure.
You know, there's the collective stories, the collective origin stories, but then there's the, you know, what brought me here stories. And so if you, I don't think that I did a very nice job drawing out that distinction, but if you read the descriptions, that's kind of the direction that it was pointing. So, you know, congratulations on being the first person to call that out. I kept waiting for someone to ask that question and say, wow, these look really similar. You're right.
Well, I think it's one of the key stories that you have to have when you first encounter people, or they really don't know who they're dealing with. And
right.
Whether we tell it consciously or unconsciously, we tell that story. And so it's a very important story, but I hadn't picked up the nuance between collective and individual. So thanks for explaining that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and isn't one of them the Why I'm Here story? Do I call that out as well?
Right, yeah. That's another one of Annette's. And the I Know What You're Thinking, which, of course, I love
that
part of her book as well.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've started doing an exercise with groups around the Why I'm Here story, where I have people identify the story and then do the Ernest Hemingway write the story in 6 words.
Mm-hmm.
And people always roll their eyes and say, oh, I can't do this, it's ridiculous. And it ends up being really powerful to distill the story down and to be that focused and get it into 6 words and then take turns sharing their 6-word stories. It's been an unexpectedly powerful exercise that I've started opening a lot of sessions with, and people love it.
Yeah, a couple of weekends ago at the National Storytelling Festival, they did a 6-word memoir on what the festival means to you, and so there were a whole lot of things that people had posted there, and it was interesting reading those as well.
Yeah, it can be a fun exercise and a fast, energizing way to bring people into a story space.
Mm.
Well, thank you.
I had a quick question, David. In one place in the book, and we can talk a little bit more about the book in a moment, but it was talking about prompts. And I noticed that, like, in the prompt that you had mentioned to us, tell me a story about a turning point in your life, at one section in the book, it puts in like the phrase remarkable in front of that, or an incredible, or the most powerful. Otherwise, it's written in the book that you might get kind of a mundane story, but if you put in something like in the remarkable experience, then you tend to get these stunning and fascinating stories with more depth. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because I'm sure sometimes you might get people who think, nothing remarkable has ever happened to me. I've never had a remarkable turning point in my life, but everybody's had a turning point. How do you balance when to ratchet up the prompt?
To me, asking for the remarkable example is when you really are trying to make a statement about aspirational possibility. If I'm not mistaken in the book, I think I have that conversation in the context of values stories,
mm-hmm.
I think,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
And so, you know, if every organization says that, you know, they have a value for quality or for excellence or for customer service, and I think that's a great place to ask for the remarkable prompt. Yeah, you know, good, we value service. Tell me about a time you saw service displayed in a remarkable way. So it's these outliers and these extreme examples that can stretch our thinking about what's possible in terms of our values. So I think there are times when you want the cool stuff, the big stuff. At the Parliament for World Religions, I intentionally did not ask for remarkable stories. I wanted participants to self-select from just kind of their full library, their full life history of stories. And if that's a mundane story, then so be it. And some of those mundane stories were really beautiful. One man who shared his story was a Tibetan monk. He was 70 years old. He looked like a 40-year-old. He didn't look old. they're living well. And he told me a story about how after he got his second PhD and moved to India, he had to learn how to ride a bicycle. And so his story was, you know, this lovely, fiercely intelligent contemplative monk having to learn this basic life skill of riding a bicycle. And it was just the most charming, lovely human story that was mundane, and yet it created this moment of just kind of universal connection. Wow, we're the same. You know, I mean, he talked about his insecurities of falling off the bike and how foolish he felt being this old and not knowing how to ride a bike. And it was universal. And so if I'd asked for something really remarkable, I might have missed that lovely mundane moment, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. Hey, just tell us, and as a preface to this, I did get David's book, and I think it's just an amazing collection of all kinds of activities and wisdom that David's brought together, and it's not just his wisdom. He's taken a bunch of very influential people, several of whom have been on our past story calls, and kind of written down this thoughts of innovation that's going on in the story field right now. So it's really powerful. Just kind of tell us a little bit about how the book's organized and what's in it, David.
Sure. So the idea of the book is I wanted to focus on capability building. And so, you know, instead of simply having a corporate event where people come in and tell their stories and, you know, it's a wonderful experience and they leave and say, that was great. Yeah, I've been focusing on, you know, as a leader, you can do this. You already have story capability. You don't need to hire me to come in and be a facilitator to help unleash your stories. And you tell stories all the time, and we're just talking about being more intentional and more purposeful and mindful about it. And so the idea of the book is if you are a leader, this book is going to equip you with lots and lots of ideas for how you can invite the wisdom of narrative into some of the most urgent imperatives of your leadership. And so to that end, you know, I have my own ideas, some things that I've seen work in programs that I do. And I also reached out to the international story community. And so, Bill, you mentioned Annette Simmons. I talked to her, and she was she's been a good friend and just a lovely collaborator. So she shared some ideas for the book. And I don't know who else has been on the call. Karen Dietz and, you know, lots of friends of SIO I collaborated with for the book. And yeah, the spirit of generosity was really remarkable. You know, I didn't run into anybody saying, no, these are my secret processes. I don't want to share them. Without exception, everyone said, story doesn't belong to me. You know, I want to share everything I know. And so, you know, my hope is that Circle of the Nine Muses represents where today the practice of organizational narrative stands, at least in a simplified, actionable form. And the feedback I'm getting from others in the story space, they're saying, yeah, this is currently what we know works. This is, in our evolving field, this is a snapshot of where we are today. So the book is it's processes for story mining. You know, if you're a leader, your organization is full of stories, some of which you haven't heard, most of which you haven't heard. How do we find those? How do we get those to bubble up in the organization? What about the stories you have in your own mind and you don't even know that they're good candidates for story? How do we surface some of those? So story mining work. Then there's strategic story work. As a leader, I should telling certain stories for certain occasions. How can I think about that? Which stories should I be telling? Then there's processes and frameworks for story content. How can I tell a better story? And that's where we get into archetypes and a lot of things that I'm confident you're very familiar with. you know, drawing from story theory and what we know about what makes an engaging story. To me, the real exciting possibilities are the meaning-making exercises. How do we come together as a group and unleash some group intelligence? So now we're having a shared conversation around what I heard in that story and what I think that story means, and how can we use that story to inform how we think about ourselves, and then how can we move forward together in a future-focused, co-created story. So all that meaning-making stuff, there's a lot of exercises around that as well.
Could we pause for a moment, and maybe you can give us an example of a meaning-making exercise that we find in the book, something that we could get our mind around a little bit more concretely?
Sure. You know, the story that I started with about receiving stories, I think there's an important conversation there. You know, how do we invite and then receive stories? And then the next step, after we've heard the story and really, you know, kind of fully experienced it and internalized it, is to feed something back to the teller. And this is where the conversation starts getting really important. And this is where you say, I heard something in your story. Or your story made me think of something. Or I think there's something informative that I want to draw out of the story. There's some new meaning that I want to create. Paul Costello is one of the collaborators on the book. He works with New Story Leadership in Washington, D.C. He's been recognized by Congress for his peacekeeping efforts between young Israeli and Palestinian leaders. And he brings young leaders together, you know, young people who've been taught to hate each other and destroy each other. And he has a process called Narrative Room, where they hear one another's stories and then they engage in some meaning-making conversations. And it creates exactly what I experienced at the Parliament. It creates connection and a new story moving forward. It's a path to peace by hearing stories. But Paul Costello shared with me a construct for listening and meaning-making. It's a geographic construct. And by that, he says that meaning exists in certain dimensions. He says there's meaning that's behind the text, there's meaning that's inside the text, and there's meaning from in front of the text. Paul is, I believe he's a Nazarene. He draws this from, you know, the process of interpreting sacred scriptures and sacred texts. It's called exegesis. Behind the text, what do I know about the teller? What is the teller bringing from their own history? And there's a series of questions and reflections that we can have about that we can feed back. Then inside the text, what did I hear in the story? You know, where did I hear leadership? Where did I hear conflict? Where did I hear change? And then in front of the story, this can be a comment on the story experience. Let me tell you what I noticed about you as you told the story. Or let me tell you what I noticed about me and how I experienced and felt this story. Let me share with you a connection that I'm now making. Hey, your story made me think of something. Hey, your story made me think about, you know, maybe there's a behavior that would build trust based on your story. What if we did that behavior all the time? So now I'm pulling something out that we can use to move us forward. So I talk about that construct of harvester, witness, connector. Harvester is inside the text, witness is behind the text, and connector is in front of the text. So it's a series of reflections and questions that's actually really actionable. It's not that difficult to do, but it's a way of helping us process the story experience so that we can begin asking ourselves some questions and feed something back to the teller and then initiate that conversation.
What do you mean by initiate it?
After a story is told, know, people usually end up saying, so that's the end of my story. And usually people say, wow, that was great. Thank you for sharing that with us. And, you know, maybe in a story program, I've done this. Next I say, so who else has a story? So that's one way to go. But we host the meaning-making conversation where, as the person, you know, I've now received the story, and so I'm going to model the meaning-making. Let me feed something back to you. So in that story you just told, I heard a lot of courage in that story. And, or maybe you know, here at our organization, we talk about the value of caring for people. And your story gave me a new way of thinking about what that care for people might look like. So now I'm actively weaving some meaning out of the story that was just told, and I'm doing it in a way that's building my leadership and building the team and building the organization. And then I invite others to do the same. Tom, what did you hear in that story? What connections did you make? When Paul Costello does this, he says they can spend a couple hours analyzing a single story. And he says it actually has a profound effect on the teller. He calls it a narrative ejection. The person, after a while, feels themselves standing outside of their story, examining it along with everybody else in the process of creating some new meaning around it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a great description. Thank you. Let's just take another quick pause here. If we've got maybe 5-10 minutes more of our call, but are there questions at this point that other people have?
You said the time went by, and it really has. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Yes,
David, this is Mark. So I'm still fascinated on the intentional listening and, you know, the mastery of that. What did you, was there an aha moment or a piece of wisdom you could share from us about what you learned in that experience?
Yes. So when I got there, you know, the organization is Life History Library, and they'd already done some structure, and they asked me to kind of consult in the process. And so they had said, we'll have a storyteller sit down, and then, you know, people like me, they said, you'll be the interviewer. And I immediately kind of bristled. I was like, ooh, I'm not sure. I don't like the interviewer metaphor. That feels very, an interviewer has the power. Interviewer steers the conversation. And I said, how about if we use a different word and not interviewer? Because I actually witnessed a few people being very active. Oh, so what did you do next? Oh, what happened after that? Oh, great. Tell me another story. And they were kind of, you know, compromising the story experience. I said, instead of interviewer, what if it's a receiver? You're there simply to receive the story. And I'm not even sure you need to ask a whole lot of questions. And then I just talked about witness. I said, what if we're there as witness? And it's a different orientation. We're not there to direct or to steer. We're there to appreciate. And if you expect to encounter the storyteller's humanity, intent is such an interesting thing to me, because intent is invisible. You know, intent is what I'm saying in my head of why I'm doing what I'm doing. So no one sees my intent, but people respond to intent all the time. And that's one of the things I was curious about. Is it because, is it showing up in my nonverbals and body language? Is it showing up in my facial expressions? Is it something even more subtle than that? But when I approach the teller with appreciation, even if it's somebody who says something that's a trigger for me, you know, the woman who said, I'm a witch, that triggered something for me initially, I set that aside, and I am here to appreciate what is beautiful about you. And with that intention, I end up receiving that. The teller responds to that. So that's something I've been thinking about a lot. Did I answer the question? I don't remember now what your question was.
No, that it absolutely hit the essence of what I wanted to understand from you. So thank you.
Great. David, what else would you like to say about the book?
I think you guys would like it. I think you should go get it.
I'm sold.
I'm in.
Yeah, is there other parts of the content? You know, there's the meaning making and the different voices of people, the archetypes of narration or stories. I'm not sure if we got through all of what's in there. I know digital storytelling has got a chapter.
Yep, there's some digital storytelling in there. There's a chapter in there that since this is a call of organizational story practitioners, there's a chapter called Twice Told Stories. And it's now one of my favorite ways to structure a story meeting. And I'd love it if any of you experimented with this and wanted to share your experiences. But it's a way of beginning with some story circles and then having each, you know, if you have multiple story circles, having each circle then select one story to share with the full group. And, you know, what this does is it replicates the dynamic that happens in social systems all the time where, you know, social systems are always choosing stories. There's always a selection process where some stories kind of rise and get repeated and sometimes even go viral. Everyone ends up repeating certain stories. And so there are ways to create that so that we begin to see the story selection process emerge in the group. And there's some other really interesting things with the Twice Told Story experience where, you know, you capture story titles on flip charts and now we can see all of the voices and all the stories in the room represented visually on flip charts, and we can do some analysis about, you know, let's look at all these stories and all these titles and what would be the, if these were chapters of a book, what would the name of the book be? Now we're taking all these stories that we've heard in the group and thinking at a higher level, what's the bigger story that all of these feed up into? What's the larger story of us that we are all living? And each of us is helping to create this larger story. So it's a really wonderful, active experience in soliciting the stories of the group and then making some very impactful statements about the identity of the organization or the larger group in a way that's a lot of fun. I'm afraid my description just made it sound pretty abstract. When you read through the chapter, you know, it spells it out step by step. Here's what this looks like, and here's how to facilitate this dialogue. And it's powerful every time I do it. So if any of you give this Twice Told Stories a try, let me know how that works out for you.
Good. And then if anybody wanted to contact you, is it David at davidhutchins.com?
Yes, and Hutchins is spelled with an E-N-S, not an I-N-S. Yeah.
So H-U-T-C-H-E-N-S. Great. Thanks.
And you're also on LinkedIn, I see.
I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook. Yeah, I'm working all those free media channels.
Great. Well, does any of our members who are on the call have a final question for David? Maybe somebody we haven't heard from yet?
I don't have a question, but I enjoyed this conversation, and it was interesting to hear about your current response with the Parliament of World Religions, because I actually was living in South Africa when it was there in 1999, and at the time
right.
It was spearheaded by a friend of mine, in James Kenney, and Lake Forest, Illinois. So that was really interesting. I like the whole idea of the storytelling. I'm not exactly a storyteller, but I work with a company that provides services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and I'm a curriculum developer for kind of doing training materials that teaches the caregivers a way of compassion and working with these people. And I've been able to translate all the intake forms, assessment forms, this, that, and the other, into identifying it as a narrative story structure. And, showing them how that works and how it can be developed so that it becomes very personal in working with this individual to give them their story and, kind of be a witness and to tell this story with them, which they're not really able to do on their own. And recently, in September, at an international conference in Kansas City, I put together a presentation called Sharing Stories, which is a culture of gentle teaching around the world, but, was kind of explaining the structure for others, that have agencies and do caregiving for developmentally disabled people. But anyway, this has all been very fascinating, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate what you said.
Sorry, let me jump in for a second here, David. And I wasn't sure who just made that comment, but maybe you could just state your name and if you'd like to leave some contact information right this minute, just in case somebody listens to this call. So, Mara.
Mara Hawks, yeah, I'm at marahawks@gmail.com.
And that's H-A-W-K-S,
uh-huh.
Mara?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Sorry, David, I had cut you off.
Well, Mara, I appreciate what you said, and there's a fascinating conversation going on right now in narrative medicine and narrative therapy,
mm-hmm.
which sounds
mm-hmm.
very similar to what you just said, which is instead of the old approach, which is, patient comes in and you say, so tell me what's wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your deficits. Let's focus on what's broken. Instead, come in and say, let's do some story work. Who are you? And then go ahead.
It gets down to creating meaningful quality of life for them. It gets down to recreating a new moral memory and, developing that dialogue with them, developing the companionship that can expand into community, and that becomes just transformative. And it becomes a responsibility is given to the caregiver that this becomes a collaborative building of a relationship that's based on trust. And the caregiver, has to utilize these reflective and observational exercises because it is from that they're able to tune in. And this is, living a life is a totally organic process. And, this just tunes them into, the unique journey of these individuals. And it's just remarkable. It's especially like to see the transformations from, people that have been diagnosed with severe just behavior problems, it's the transformation because it's the responsibility of the other person, of us, that needs to look at it differently. You kind of talked about, when someone tells a story and you put aside that bias, you begin to find the connections. And it's all about creating these connections and making these connections and then building those bridges.
Mm, beautifully said there, Mara. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a high calling, Mara. Lovely work. Thank you.
Oh, gosh. Thank you. Yeah. I'm just privileged to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah, gosh, I'm sure that we could do a joint call between the Healing Story Alliance and Storytelling and Organization. I've often thought we have so many things in common.
Mm.
David, just a final word, maybe a little encouragement or advice for folks, and then we'll finish up here.
I don't know if it was Tricia or Mara who said, I'm not a storyteller. I think that was Mara who said that.
Yeah, I
really don't position myself as a storyteller either. You know, I don't do festivals and I don't do performances. And it's a wonderful thing. And maybe if I was more polished, I could figure out a way to make some money doing that. But to me, the opportunity is story dialogue. And, you know, there's the stories I tell you, but then there's the story space that we create where everybody is engaged. And now we're taking turns and we're hearing one another and we're connecting and engaging in a different way and we're drawing some meaning out of it. To me, that's the exciting possibility of story work, and that's what I'm interested in. And I've appreciated this opportunity to share some of that with you. So thank you, Tom, for hosting me. Thank you, everybody, for staying on a little bit extra longer.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes. Yeah, thank you, David. Thank you for everybody who joined in. And we'll have more next month. But everybody have a great rest of your Sunday. And thank you again, David Hutchins, for sharing some of your insights, your wisdom, your experience, and your enthusiasm from a guy who's not even calling himself a storyteller who has written so many wonderful things that compel storytelling in the world.
Everybody come find me on LinkedIn. Let's stay in conversation.
Great. Thanks,
thank
David.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Yes. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
And Tricia and Pete and Mark, hopefully you'll stay on the line.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'll end our recording here. And great. And Jules.